Puerto Rico's governor offered a concession to protesters.
Le anuncio que no iré a la reelección como gobernador en el próximo año.
He says he won't run for re-election. Is that enough for protesters who want him to resign?
I'm Steve Inskeep with Rachel Martin, and this is Up First from NPR News. Protesters in Hong Kong have not accepted small concessions. They want to preserve the freedoms promised them when China took over their region. What's the Chinese government's plan after weekend protests turned violent?
And Iran seizes a British oil tanker in the Strait of Hormuz, the latest in a string of aggressive moves in the region. How will Britain and the international community respond? Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Simply Safe Home Security. Simply Safe protects your whole home, every window, room, and door, with around-the-clock professional monitoring and no long-term contracts. Get free shipping on your order at simplysafe.com/upfirst. Support for Up First also comes from Honest, striving to make better-for-you products. When you choose an Honest beverage, money goes to Fair Trade certified suppliers to help support their communities. Visit honesttea.com/podcast to learn more.
Puerto Rico's governor, Ricardo Rosselló, says he will not seek re-election in 2020.
He said that after a week of protests in San Juan. Demonstrators want him to quit. He was under pressure even before the media published hundreds of pages of text messages between the governor and his main advisors. Here's what we do not know. Is the announcement that he won't seek re-election but will stay in the job for now enough for Puerto Ricans who planned another demonstration today?
We are joined by NPR's Adrian Florido in San Juan covering this. Hi, Adrian.
Hi, Rachel.
So tell us more about what Governor Rosselló said about his political future.
Well, yesterday evening, without any advance notice, the governor went on to Facebook Live and said that he would not be running for governor next year as he'd originally planned. He also said he would be resigning the presidency of his party, that's Puerto Rico's pro-statehood party. Let's listen to what he said on Facebook Live.
Ante este escenario, le anuncio que no iré a la reelección como gobernador en el próximo año. Además, estoy renunciando a la presidencia del Partido Nuevo Progresista.
Importantly, the governor also said that he would not resign the governorship as protesters have been demanding for more than a week, that he would finish his current term, and also that he would welcome defending himself in an impeachment process that the island's legislature appears to be preparing to begin to initiate against him.
So he was just saying that, again, that he wasn't going to run for re-election. Is that going to be enough to satisfy all those critics?
No. The governor's announcement seemed to only anger protesters out on the streets even more. Right after he made his announcement, I actually went out to the protest that was happening outside of the governor's mansion and spoke with people who said that his decision not to seek re-election wasn't enough. They said he had to resign now. They seemed even more motivated to continue protesting because this was no longer just about the governor, they told me, that the governor had become sort of a symbol of decades of corruption and bad decisions by leaders that have gotten Puerto Rico into all kinds of crises, fiscal crises, post-hurricane crises, and that they want something new. It's an interesting, really interesting thing that's been happening over the last week, which is that each time the governor said he's not going to step down, the crowds and the demonstrations against him only seem to get more energized. And, you know, really these protests happening across the island are remarkable and unlike anything that Puerto Rico's ever seen.
I mean, we should just remind people, this was about allegations of corruption within his own administration, his general handling of the aftermath of the hurricane, and these specific text messages that were, to many, seemed to be misogynist and offensive, right?
Misogynist and offensive and sort of reflective of a governor and more broadly, the sort of a political system that is sort of out of touch with the real struggles that Puerto Ricans have been facing for more than a decade because of all those crises I was just talking about. Mm-hmm. This morning, in fact, there's a massive protest planned here in San Juan. It's going to take over San Juan's biggest highway. Hundreds of thousands of people are expected to show up. It's everyone's talking about this being one of the most important days in Puerto Rico's history in terms of it being a political awakening for people.
All right, NPR's Adrian Florido in San Juan. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Rachel.
So the choice for Puerto Rican protesters is whether the governor's concession is enough. In Hong Kong, though, protesters have already shown the government's concessions are clearly not.
For 7 weeks, demonstrators have been protesting Hong Kong's government and the control that mainland China has increased over that territory. It all started as a protest against an extradition bill that critics feared would open the door to China prosecuting political opponents in Hong Kong. The bill was suspended. Hong Kong's leader said it was dead, but that was not enough. And over the weekend, hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets again.
We've got NPR's Julie McCarthy on the line, who's been on the ground in Hong Kong. Hi, Julie.
Hi there.
So Steve noted there were these huge protests over the weekend, as we have seen for so many weekends, and there was some violence, in particular this incident where an unidentified group attacked pro-democracy activists. Is that right? What can you tell us?
Well, it was a really vicious attack, and it put 45 people in the hospital. Protesters had just stepped from the train on their way home late last night when a group of men dressed in white T-shirts, opposite of the protesters' signature black T-shirts, attacked them. Here's what it sounded like as they were pummeling and kicking these pro-democracy protesters. There's a theory circulating that the assailants were supporters of mainland China. This happened in the new territories that abuts the Chinese mainland. It took the police over an hour to respond. One pro-democracy lawmaker who got bloodied in the assault said he suspected it was intentionally delayed. You know, mysterious men attacking citizens deepens Hong Kong's anxieties now. Right. And here's what Carrie Lam, the chief executive, had to say today as she condemned this attack.
Violence is not a solution to any problem. Violence will only breed more violence. And at the end of the day, the whole of Hong Kong and the people will suffer.
So, Julie, though, what is this about in this moment? I mean, Carrie Lam declared that this extradition bill was over. It was dead. So what do protesters specifically want?
Well, they still want the extradition bill totally withdrawn. It's only been suspended. And, you know, that bill has come to symbolize for the protesters Beijing's strengthening grip over Hong Kong in defiance of the one country, two systems formula it had promised Hong Kong. Hong Kong's freedoms were supposed to be honored in that bargain. And instead, protesters say China is eroding them. And that has expanded into a demand for political reform. They want to elect their own government. If they're going to preserve their liberties, they say we better start selecting our own leaders. But they have to wrest control from Beijing because they basically approve Hong Kong's officials.
So, Julie, these protests have gotten so large. There are so many people involved at this point. Have you seen any indications of factions developing, or are the protesters united?
Well, you know, it was another day of defiance, but, you know, I didn't see those cracks in the movements in this unity, which is really rather remarkable. You know, even when protesters managed to spray paint the Chinese liaison office, Beijing's most important body here, the local administrator, when they did that, people weren't too put off by it. It was the local administration that fumed. They were challenging Beijing's sovereignty, which is what the demonstrators said they had intended. And if there are cracks in that goals, you don't see them. Quite the opposite.
And here's Julie McCarthy reporting for us this morning. Thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
Okay, so why did Iranian forces seize a British-flagged oil tanker? Iran has given several conflicting reasons.
We do know a bit more about how Iran seized the ship. Newly released audio captures the moment when Iranian forces approached the giant tanker called the Stena Impero.
Please confirm that you are not intending to violate international law by unlawfully attempting to board the MV Stena.
Take care, shed port.
Farja port.
Stena, I thought this is...
Good evening, Caro.
Board in vicinity. If you obey, you will be safe, Captain.
If you obey, you will be safe, is the warning there by radio. Foreign Minister Javad Zarif wrote on Twitter over the weekend that Iran did this to, quote, uphold international maritime rules. The UK sees things differently, and Prime Minister Theresa May chairs an emergency security session today to discuss a response.
We've got NPR's Greg Myrie with us in studio. Greg, tell us more about this oil tanker. Where was it going? What was it doing?
Right. So this was a British flag tanker. It was in the Gulf, and it was seized by Iran's Revolutionary Guards on Friday. In addition to the audio we just played, there was some dramatic video of this that came out over the weekend. Shows an Iranian helicopter and the Revolutionary Guard troops rappelling down a rope onto this vessel, which it has seized and taken to an Iranian port. Mm-hmm. There's a crew of 23, 18 of them are citizens of India, no citizens of Britain, but it's created this real standoff with Britain. And as we mentioned, Prime Minister Theresa May is having a meeting today with her Security Council. We'll likely to see what Britain intends to do. I think the thing to be looking for is not necessarily a military response right now, but Britain may be willing to join this sort of maritime escort that the U.S. is trying to organize to have military ships escort oil tankers in the Gulf to prevent this kind of thing.
So explain the justification that Iran has given. As Steve noted, they've been kind of back and forth with conflicting messages. Where did they land?
Well, I think it's really that it's a tit-for-tat operation here. On July 4th, Britain seized an Iranian tanker off the waters of Gibraltar. Uh-huh. This was apparently an Iranian tanker filled with oil headed to Syria, according to Britain. And Britain said this is in violation of European Union sanctions. And then that's why they've seized it and are still holding that ship.
Except Iran isn't subject to those sanctions.
That's Iran's argument. They're saying, that's European Union business and their sanctions with Syria. That doesn't involve us. You should not be taking our tanker. Mm-hmm. And in a very similar commando style, the Iran responded on Friday. So now we have this standoff, we'll see how that plays out.
And so you mentioned Britain's response in part has been to create some kind of escort system. And what's been the broader international response to this?
So there's been a lot of criticism of Iran, and there wasn't great enthusiasm for this sort of U.S., the U.S. pulling out of the nuclear deal, of imposing sanctions on Iran. But we've seen France and Germany and even Britain was supportive of keeping the nuclear deal in place. But Iran's action is having the effect of encouraging countries to criticize Iran. It may increase the desire of other countries to join this sort of escort to help protect the safety of tankers.
Does
in
it
the
be
Gulf.
Like warships and more planes just watching after tankers? As they go.
We saw this back in the 1980s, where the U.S. would escort with naval craft and helicopters, making sure that oil tankers were not attacked as they headed in and out of the Gulf.
So much more to cover in coming days, I am sure. NPR's Greg Myrie on this. Thank you, Greg. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
And before we go, another story we're watching today. Yukiya Amano, the International Atomic Energy Agency Director General, has died. He was 72 years old. The IAEA made the announcement today on its website, but didn't give a cause of death. The news comes at a time when nuclear nonproliferation is a top issue for the U.S. and its allies. The IAEA's whole mission is to promote safe, secure use of nuclear technology. You can find out more at NPR News and online at npr.org. And that is up first for this Monday, July 22nd. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Steve Inskeep. Join us tomorrow. And since the news does not stop, when the podcast does, follow us on Twitter at Up First for your roundup of the most important stories of the day.
Thanks so much for listening to Up First. You can find more in-depth coverage of the stories that we talked about today and so much more on NPR's Morning Edition. That is a show on the radio. I host it. Steve hosts it, too. Also, Noel King and, of course, David Green. You can find Morning Edition on your NPR station, and you can find your station at stations.npr.org.
Now, I hope and expect this to be the only time that I will speak to you in this manner. I would not provide information beyond that which is already public in any appearance before Congress.
Special Counsel Robert Mueller isn't getting his wish. He's set to testify about his investigation into Russian interference and possible obstruction of justice by President Trump. Afterwards, the NPR Politics podcast is going to be there to break down everything you need to know about what he says.